The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. My name is Josh Norris. Thank you so much for being here. This is our second podcast since us have returned from vacation. Appreciate you sticking with us. Today is much like last week. We'll hit on the news. We'll hit on a few things. And to do that, as always, I need my best buddies on the whole wide internet world. First, we'll start with Patrick Doherty. Patrick, how are you?
Just devoted to my children now. So just raising two kids, that's pretty much all I do with my time. So I barely even think about football anymore. It's just so frivolous.
What are they into?
The only one who's sentient really is my 3-year-old daughter. My 11-month-old son is really into floor crumbs.
Okay. Like my dog, same thing.
Really into floor crumbs, really into pulling himself up on things. Really okay. Into anything I've set anywhere that is reachable, just immediately pulling that down.
I think the kids call that parkouring.
My 3-year-old daughter, even though I tried to guard against this a little bit, is very into princesses. And today is wearing a Princess Anna dress.
Raymond, do you have a favorite Disney princess?
I guess Ariel, right?
Ariel is my daughter's favorite, so you would become my daughter's new favorite person.
Yeah, I saw the new Aladdin live action one. It was pretty all right. I do like Jasmine. I like those Disney movies. I thought you were going to ask me what I was doing, and I was going to say whatever I want because I made the decision to not have children. But but I suppose.
These kids are going to save the world, Ray. I'm not placing any expectations on them whatsoever, except for they're going to save the world.
Mulan, I think, is an underrated Disney princess.
Mulan is quality. Yeah, Mulan is good. Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns. Anytime that comes on, you know it, you're about to jam.
Let's get down to business.
There you go. Exactly. I wasn't going to do it because I didn't want that recorded.
I did. Ray, I have actually a question for you to start off with. Okay. And this is serious. I don't mean to pick on you, but I feel like this is a good time, as always. It's not an intervention of sorts, but, you know, I feel like this is the platform for it. Right? There are two types of people in the world, right? There are ones that have their red text on notification and ones that have it off. Ray, why are you of the section of humanity that wants to have their red text notifications on?
Because I'm not scared. Like, why do all of you live in constant fear? Like, here's the deal. If I read your text that didn't respond and didn't think it warranted a response, I want you to know that. I'm not fearful. Yeah. I made a decision. I'm not afraid of my decisions. I stand behind them. Everybody should have their red text on. I believe Pat does as well. Is that correct, Pat?
No, I don't. God, no. Oh. Everyone has to live in mystery. And everyone knows, by the way, that even the text receipt people secretly are letting texts pile up all the time on the front of their, like on their homepage, you know, just can't even open their phone because they don't want to accidentally send out a read receipt. Well, we all know how it actually goes. So
I read every text and I leave a lot of people on read and I'm fine with it. I'm comfortable myself.
You do the opposite with me. Like with me, you don't even have it as read. There are plenty of times where I text you about Aston Villa things going on in this world, the most important things happening in this universe.
Factual.
And yet for hours, you haven't even looked at your phone and looked at my conversation. That is hurtful.
Well, I mean, I also nap because, again, I made the decision to not have children. So
not true. I involuntarily fell asleep on the couch last night right before dinner. So we do sleep sometimes.
Ray, let's get down to business. Let's get to the news of the week. A lot has happened. I mean, it really is amazing. And again, maybe a year from now, we won't remember any of this news that has happened. But as we sit here of the past 5 or 6 days, things have gone on. And it kind of extends from the conversation we had last week, Ray, based on the Houston Texans still not having a general manager. I think last time we talked, a lot of us expected that Nick Caserio was just going to kind of walk into that job. Well, since then, the Texans have withdrawn their interest in Nick Caserio. And Ray, it kind of seems like a lot of that was kind of an owner-to-owner conversation and a clause in Caserio's contract.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, they didn't have a leg to stand on because of some language in Caserio's contract. But then news comes out that Caserio doesn't want to be there anymore, which is perfectly understandable. They've now blocked him from going and getting what is ultimately a promotion. Is this, what, the third or fourth time they've done it to him? So understandably, he's done with it. His contract is up after next year's draft, for the 2020 draft. So it'll be interesting to see how this works out. Are the Patriots comfortable having a person who wants out? Are they comfortable having that person that's just, you know, counting down the days until they're leaving? Who knows? So maybe there's still something to play here. I kind of don't think this saga is over, but it also seems like the Texans are happy waiting. They're happy with the people they have and the kind of structures they have in place and the decisions that they'll be able to make over the next, you know, over the next, what is it, 9 months until they can hire Caserio if they want. But I still think there are some chapters left in this story.
Pat, do we think that the Texans just go into next season without a general manager? Is that a possibility?
Certainly seems like it. Like Ray said, they're basically waiting for Caserio. And I will say the article that he wants out seemed like kind of more like connecting dots from Ben Volen at the Boston Globe. And he's connecting obvious dots. It would certainly appear that Caserio wanted this job. And like you said, for the second time in 2 years, he was denied the chance to even interview. So that's not going to be a healthy dynamic. But yeah, this seemed like basically the Texans' one play. And it kind of lends credence to the Patriots' belief that they did tamper, seeing as, yep, you know, they hastily fired Brian Gain the day after Jack Easterby and Caserio talked at the ring ceremony. And then after they're denied permission, there's now like this talk, yeah, that they're not going to have a GM this year. So to me, it would seem that maybe there was some actual tampering going on there. But Ben Volen's takeaway, and really what I would say the obvious takeaway, is that, yeah, it appears that Nick Caserio, whether it's this summer or when his contract runs out after the draft next year, is going to be in the Texans' front office. And this year, Bill O'Brien, who kind of was already, you know, used to kind of throwing his weight around, maybe having final say-ish, he's going to just be kind of chill with that this year. And yeah, they're not going to have an official GM, and they're just biding their time for old Nick.
Not to pick on Ben Volen here, because he's very good. And I mean, we cite a lot of his stuff, but it was weird how, you're right, Pat, that like it was kind of dot connecting, but then it was framed as this is the real story and like the truth.
It was strange. It was a very strangely presented article. Yeah. Cause it seemed like mostly opinion, but it was definitely not presented that way. It was presented as like the real story, like a Seth Wickersham article or something, when it was mostly a reporter kind of connecting X to Y to Z.
I am of the opinion that it does make sense for them not to hire anyone at this point, because really we talk about cohesion between the head coach and general manager being paramount for, you know, success, long-term success for an NFL team. And if it really just does take you 9 months to get that person rather than just hiring someone that you aren't fully on board with, just waiting until after the 2020 draft does just make a ton of sense.
And they're in a position where they can, no team should ever coast in the NFL, and they will be in danger of falling behind. But with the franchise quarterback, you know, some other kind of linchpin players, it's not like they're in a position where this is like the year they have to be, you know, grinding prospects harder than any other team or anything like that. So they are in a year where they can sort of, as much as any NFL team can, kind of be on autopilot. But yeah, never ideal.
Moving on to the New York Giants, Pat Shurmur, not going to say he's changed his the way he's talking about the Eli Manning, Daniel Jones situation, but his verbiage and his tone has changed a little bit here. I just posted my draft decisions, I guess, a few days ago on the NFC East. And in that, just immediately after the draft, Pat Shurmur said the goal is for Eli to be our quarterback in 2019. It certainly seems like, Ray, now that Pat Shurmur is at least a little bit more open to Daniel Jones being the starting quarterback in week one, or at least he thinks that he should be ready to have that mantle.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the way that he kind of framed his comments. It was kind of coach talky, and that, you know, Eli Manning is preparing to be the starter and Daniel Jones needs to be prepared for week one. If that happens, that's a bunch of, you know, coach talk nonsense. But the fact that he would even entertain the idea that Daniel Jones could be under center week one, I think is a departure from what we've heard this entire offseason. It comes on the heels of Daniel Jones apparently showing well during the offseason program, at least, you know, based on reports that we're seeing, and I suppose what players think of him. So I do think there's something to this. I do kind of lean that this is more coach talk. I mean, we saw what happened the last time coach tried to bench Eli. So we'll see how that goes. But the second thing I would say to this is he should be yep, open to Daniel Jones, yes, starting, because Eli Manning has not been very good. So like it shouldn't be a surprise. They shouldn't have been that committed to Eli Manning to start with. So if it takes this kind of softening as we go through for them to get where they're going, then yeah, sure, it all works.
To me, this could end up following a fairly standard, actually, off-season coach speak kind of thing that ends with Daniel Jones, if not starting week one, then early in the season, because we all know kind of how this goes. You know, like a team, number one overall, you know, they draft like, you know, Bart Starr. But then at the press conference the following day, like, oh, no, we're still, Mike Glennon is still the starting quarterback of this football team. How dare you insinuate otherwise? Mike Glennon will be this team's quarterback. And then 2 months later, you know, actually, yeah, Bart Starr has been looking pretty good in OTAs. You know, anything could, you know, an asteroid could hit Earth tomorrow. Anything could happen. And then by like the third preseason game, it's, oh, we're very, very excited about Bart Starr. We're reevaluating what we're going to do week one. So it couldn't end up being a fairly standard offseason of coach speak for Pat Shurmur.
It legitimately happens every single offseason. Like it happened literally with Sam Bradford and Carson Wentz.
It's happened with Sam Bradford and many people.
This is true. Ray, I think you were dead on though. Like this should have been their mindset from the start with how Eli has played for the last, what, three seasons? And the fact that it hasn't been is news, but maybe this is a step in the right direction. And maybe it's Pat Shurmur realizing, hey, maybe we should want to win football games and put someone out there that gives us the best chance of doing that, rather than just sticking by this corpse of a solid quarterback that has been out there for the last couple of years.
He prefers mummy.
Tell us what you really think. Goodness.
I mean, it's true. He's been one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL over the last 2 years.
No, I agree with you. I will say that maybe this is always their plan. Like maybe behind the scenes, this was their thing, and they're just kind of slow playing it to, I guess, you know, to make sure Eli doesn't get his feelings hurt, I suppose. Yeah. So there could have been a little bit of that too. I'm not going to throw them under the bus because this might have been the plan all along.
Also, it's like peak media OTA stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That – Daniel Jones is so much better than anyone thought he was at this point in the calendar. Like, okay, nothing has happened.
Well, we know he performs well at Praxis because that's where Dave Gettleman fell in love with him.
This is true.
And you would pray that a player you took at number six overall was lighting up padless practice. So, yeah.
Right. Moving on to Dante Moncrief, a name we have not discussed very often here on the show for quite a while. The Athletic's Mark Coboli writes that Dante Moncrief looks like the slam dunk number two receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pat, this is relevant because the Steelers have been one of the best offenses production-wise supporting multiple pass catchers for years and years and years. And that's not something we can say about every single team in the league. Plus, we know there are so many targets on the table still. And if Moncrief is running as again, Juju's not purely a slot guy, but mainly a slot guy. So if Moncrief is emerging as, you know, the focal point as the outside receiver, that's something we should really, really pay attention to.
It is a storyline we need to pay attention to. I'm hoping this is kind of a James Washington subtweet to kind of maybe get him going by the Steelers. But Dante Moncrief, you know, some of it circumstances beyond his control, but what, he's 5 years in his career. He's had two 500 yard seasons. Caboli kind of described like a 50 to 60 catch campaign, which is realistic, but that if he was only catching 50 to 60 balls, that would indicate more probably kind of like splitting number two duties. I guess I'll buy it. And then right now that might be what the Steelers are planning on doing, but I'm sure they're hoping James Washington, after a fairly frustrating rookie year, will be able to hit another gear in camp this summer and can maybe take control of that. Cause it would, you know, they clearly like Dante Moncrief because they signed him, but I'm assuming they would view it as a defeat if Dante Moncrief ends up as their like locked in number two receiver. So maybe my guess is that this is a motivational tactic, but also with some truth to it, because he probably is number two in the depth chart right now.
Yeah, and I don't actually think I kind of take this a different way. I don't think it's that big of a surprise that this was the case. And I know we all wanted James Washington to kind of emerge, but it wasn't just that
we all
he
want
didn't
him to not randomly dive all the time.
That'd be helpful.
Anytime the ball is passed to him. Oh, that too.
Yeah, that would be great. But last year, if we're talking about his rookie season, he didn't get a lot of targets, obviously. But even when he was getting targets, it's not like he was good. Like, there was a point in the season where he was a healthy scratch in favor of Justin Hunter. That is what we're talking about here. So that's not to say that he won't improve. He was just a rookie. You know, he finished the season pretty well once he was kind of thrust into a bigger role. A lot of smart people really liked him coming out of school. This is not to say that his story is written. Certainly not that. And it's certainly possible he comes out in training camp, shows really well, passes up Moncrief and kind of, you know, gets to where I guess everybody kind of expected him to be. But I mean, he does need to improve. That is something that needs to happen for us to go. And on Moncrief, I want to say, I think that, you know, he's mostly disappointed in his career. And I know that I'm the Moncrief apologist, so you can make fun of me all you like. But he has spent a lot of time in his career playing with terrible quarterbacks. 141 of his targets, career targets, and it's something like 300 and something. So less than half of his career targets were received from Andrew Luck. Every other target has been from a bad quarterback. And on those 141 quarterbacks from targets from Luck, he has 1,036 yards and 14 touchdowns, catching about 60% of those. Those are pretty good numbers. You look at the Steelers, and obviously they have a better quarterback situation than he was dealing with last year when Luck was out. They throw a lot. They've thrown at least 590 passes in each of the last five seasons. Moncrief only needs like a 17% target share to get to 100. And if he gets to 100, he's going to be a viable fantasy option, especially with the kind of touchdown upside he was able to show with Luck. So I think there's something really here with Moncrief, and I'm excited if you can draft him in the 13th or 14th round.
He doesn't turn 26 until August. And there's definitely, as you basically just said, there's some potential Eric Ebron situation there, like kind of a mid-career breakout.
Ray, when I tweeted that Dante Moncrief is the wide receiver version of Kristen Michael, did you secretly no longer want to be my colleague at RotoWorld anymore?
I knew you were subtweeting me. I knew.
No, I wasn't. I truly was not. I truly, truly would never do that.
Subtweet inceptioning going on here. We're subtweeting James Washington. We're subtweeting Ray. All about Dante Moncrief.
I don't think I'm wrong, but.
No, I don't think you're wrong either. But I would say that the majority of his career targets have been from bad quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And the chunk of them that were from good quarterbacks, he was actually fine. And that's something that you really have to consider now that he's catching passes from Ben Roethlisberger.
And he's still playing, which is, you know. Different than that other guy. Okay, let's move on to a news item that I'm kind of leading into a much bigger question, that Matthew Stafford was playing with small fractures in his back. I believe that Ian Rappaport described them as tiny fractures, but he was able to play through them somehow. I guess, Pat, my bigger question here is, I don't know like who Matthew Stafford is as a quarterback anymore in the NFL. Like, I don't know if he's a top 15 quarterback, a top 20 quarterback anymore. It kind of gives me questions, and I don't often think about the Detroit Lions anymore. What's your feeling on this entire offense and even Stafford, particularly this year?
You're saying you don't usually get existential about Matthew Stafford. You really haven't lived if you don't do that. Sounds like basically he was playing through the injury that Tony Romo and Derek Carr both have. Typically, you usually miss a game with it. Matthew Stafford has played hurt a lot, missed no games. So it's something that other quarterbacks have done, but I believe Romo was fairly ineffective. No, Romo was effective playing through it. Actually, Derek Carr was not, as has been the case with him in many other situations.
There could be an underlying reason for those two things.
Yeah, yes, true.
Called talent. Anyway,
Stafford, it's like, what do you, Stafford, it's, he had finally had his identity, which, you know, relied on volume, quantity more than quality, but it wasn't like completely subpar quality. He was kind of had settled in just above league average, like was not like a, the numbers were goosed, obviously above volume, but he had finally settled into an identity or quantity, and was fairly efficient too. He was an efficient, prolific passer who, you know, didn't hit big plays like the way, you know, an Aaron Rodgers would, or like a true star would. And now, like, he basically has had the rug pulled out from underneath him, where the two things he's always been good at are slinging it all over the ball yard and kind of doing it at a high percentage the final two or three years under Jim Bob Cooter. Matt Patricia completely erased basically the identity he spent almost a decade establishing. And now he's just kind of this guy who loves to throw, who's just going to be handing it off all the time. And I mean, he's not even really a 4,000 yard passer anymore. And yeah, it's just after he spent so much time kind of searching for himself as an NFL quarterback. He found it. It wasn't the greatest thing ever, but he found it. And now it's been taken away from him. And yeah, you gotta really think deeply about Matthew Stafford at least once a week, Josh.
My uncertain state does have this qualification, though, that this is a team that Pat just mentioned about Jim Bob Cooter and Matt Patricia, like maybe not seeing eye to eye and, you know, changing the offense completely, plus this back issue with Matthew Stafford, plus trading Golden Tate, plus losing Kerryon Johnson for like half the season, if not more, plus Marvin Jones going on IR. Like, is this potentially just a totally new look Lions offense that we might see in 2019? And if so, could it be one of the surprises in the NFL? Because like I said, it's not even popping into the front of my brain when I'm thinking about what I'm looking forward to heading into the season.
Well, I think it's clear if the Lions have their way, it's going to be a different looking offense. It's going to be, they're going to quote unquote establish the run, and they're going to try to build their offense that way. We saw the Seahawks be relatively successful with it last year. Obviously, they have Russell Wilson, who is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, who bailed them out time after time after time. And we saw in the playoffs when that didn't happen, how that worked out. But they're going to try to make that their offense. Will that work? Well, I mean, you have to have game script in your favor. You need the defense to play well for that to work. I'm not sold at all, obviously, on the Lions defense, although I do think they've gotten better. So there's, you know, there's a lot of questions there. But I think if they had their way, they would be a run first offense, which, by the way, is why I'm still interested, even though I like Kerryon Johnson. And I don't think, I made a joke last week that CJ Anderson was going to lead the Lions in rushing. I actually think that, but I think that Anderson could have some standalone value if this team is definitely able to do what they want to do. And he's basically like, he's almost free at this point in drafts, I think. Yeah. So that could be a fantasy takeaway here, is that this is probably how they want to run their offense. Will they be able to do it? That's still up for debate, but it certainly could be interesting.
Yeah. If I had to bet, we're not going to see like any kind of like quote unquote, like normalization with Matthew Stafford. I think last year, despite Josh, you laid out kind of all the extenuating circumstances, but I think that, as Ray said, who they want to be. One of the reports from offseason practice was that they wanted to use three tight end sets, like not just at the goal line, not just in short yardage situations, but something they might just want to do in like the regular run of play. That probably won't really happen that often. But yeah, I think there was kind of no illusion. Like, we saw what we saw last year. That's who they want to be, and that's what they're going all in on.
So before we hit this final segment, there are a couple more pieces of news, and I'll just list them. And if you want to hit on one, you can hit on one. Leonard Fournette apparently is going to be a big part of the Jaguars passing game in 2019. It feels like I've been sleeping for a year because I heard the same thing in previous seasons as well. Also, Chris Conley is looking like the top wide receiver for the Jaguars in 2019.
I
don't know if that's supposed to give us warm, fuzzy feelings or just existential dread heading into this next football season. Also, on a lighter note, a good football player, Michael Thomas, is about to become the highest paid wide receiver in football. Dan Rossini said that he and the Saints are closing in on a contract, and I think that's super valid. But I also think that highest paid, quote unquote, like, doesn't even matter anymore, because no, then just the next good wide receiver is going to become the highest paid wide receiver in 5 days or whatever that happens.
On the Fournette thing, I actually don't really like doubt that a lot. I mean, Fournette has averaged 3.5 targets per game in his career. So yes. It's not like he hasn't been involved at all. He hasn't really had drop problems. He showed that he can make things happen after the catch. He's obviously not running complex routes down the field. His average depth of target in his career is 1 yard. So he's not going down the field and doing, you know, like David Johnson things or anything, but he could take a short pass, make something happen after the catch and do reasonable things with that. So that's not really that crazy of an idea to me. I mean, if he ended up with, I guess, 50 catches, I would like, that wouldn't be shocking to me.
Yeah. He has 58 career catches. Like you said, he's not going to be like Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson from like a pass catching concepts standpoint, but you know, not a lot behind him. You can certainly see why they want to create a situation where he can stay on the field as much as possible. The Chris Conley thing, you know, if Andy Reid couldn't do it, I'm not sure John DeFilippo
you got it.
Can do it.
Philippians 3:16, yes.
Yes, yes. So Chris Conley had some moments of usefulness with the Chiefs, but boy, yeah, talk about the darkest timeline if Chris Conley is actually the number one wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Ray, I think I'm just in my head about Leonard Fournette because for some reason
you and Tom Coughlin
excited.
Both.
Yeah, I was excited to draft him last year. But I could kind of see, Ray, we just talked about with the Lions and how many, you know, personnel issues and play calling issues they faced last year. The Jaguars being in a similar situation heading into this year, right? Because they have a new quarterback, they have a new play caller. How many offensive line injuries they had last year? There's no TJ Yeldon, so could Leonard Fournette take over that role as well? I do also want to mention a Graham Barfield tweet because Graham Barfield's very good at his job. Leonard Fournette trails only Zeke Elliott in touches per game over the last 2 years, while only Todd Gurley has seen more carries per game inside the opponent's 5-yard line than Fournette. So yes, the volume is there, but I would also say that from a talent standpoint, Leonard Fournette hasn't shown nearly as much as Zeke Elliott and Todd Gurley. And I'm still waiting on, honestly, Fournette to be more than an adequate to good football player. Like, I don't think we've necessarily seen that yet from him.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But I would say that the only thing that I really actually, you know, care about is opportunity and volume. And I'm pretty sure, as you said, that Leonard Fournette is going to get that if he stays healthy. That's the concern, I think, with Fournette. His kind of how effective he is, that's not that big of a deal to me if he continues to get the work. And like you said, there's not really much of anything behind him. But from like a fantasy perspective, I think the real concern is he going to stay on the field? And if he does, I bet he does better than his ADP. And if he doesn't, he probably won't. And unfortunately, that's not really something we can predict with any accuracy.
And last year, I think he was going at like the middle to end part of round one or the round two. And he's going in that round two, round three territory right now. All right, let's close out this podcast. I had this idea. You guys, I guess, said it was okay. At least you didn't deny it. So I think it's still a good idea. That we read so much news this offseason. Y'all blurb this news for RotoWorld. And it's good. It's content. But at times, there are plenty of fibs, untruth tellings, even lies, potentially. So I challenged both of you to come to the table with a lie that you have recently read that you just have to tell the people to not trust in this statement. Ray, let's start with you.
Well, it's the off season, and that means that it's time to hear about Jordan Howard improving as a receiver from a coaching staff which has never worked with them before.
Got it.
That is prime off season content.
It is true. And
to be fair to Howard, Pro Football Focus did not credit him with any drops last season. He had a bunch his first two, didn't credit him with any drops. Of course, he was targeted just 26 times, exclusively near the line of scrimmage, but he did not drop any passes last year, so I guess there's something to be said for that. But, I mean, the Bears got rid of him specifically because he could not function well enough in the passing game to keep defenses honest. That is why they got rid of him and replaced him with David Montgomery. Maybe they were wrong. Maybe the Eagles will somehow get the best out of him. But I have a very difficult time believing that Howard is suddenly going to like become a third down back and just be super useful in the passing game, like in his fourth season in the league. It's really hard to believe that.
Yeah, and he got traded to a team that, so the Bears drafted David Montgomery in the third round, and then Jordan Howard got traded to a team that drafted an apparent all-purpose back in the second round.
I'm going to actually cite a Roto Pat tweet here. Pat, on June 16th, you went back into the archives of the Roto World blurbing system. It's a dark place there. But you yes. recalled that on, and you tweeted out three headlines and three blurbs, one from July 10th of 2018, that the headline was Jordan Howard plans to improve his pass catching ability this year.
Yep.
On July 22nd, 2018, Bears coach Matt Nagy is confident Jordan Howard can be an every down player. And then on August 24th of 2018, at 9:40 a.m., Bears coach Matt Nagy said Jordan Howard will stay on the field for third down. So, Ray, I guess we're a month ahead of schedule of the Jordan Howard love at this time in the calendar compared to 2018.
It's just perfect. It really is. Now, I do want to say this. This, like, me saying that he's probably not going to become a great pass catcher is not saying that I think he's going to disappear. And I know Pat mentioned Miles Sanders, and I know everybody wants Miles Sanders to kind of emerge as the lead back, but that's not how the Eagles have operated since Doug Peterson showed up. And what they've been consistently saying this year, they've also been consistently saying that, you know, Jordan Howard can catch passes. So maybe we should take this all with a grain of salt. But what they've been consistently saying throughout this offseason is that they do plan to continue the committee approach. I kind of think that's what will happen. I think Jordan Howard will have a role in that offense, but I just don't imagine it will be as a pass catcher.
I'll go next. I am going to actually talk about James Conner, but via a quote from James Conner. Recently, James Conner, the Pittsburgh Steelers running back, said he expects the team to spread out, quote unquote, backfield touches pretty evenly. This isn't going to happen. This is going to be James Conner's backfield. Maybe they'll open the season and like try to work in Jalen Samuels and Benny Snell and whoever else is there and maybe try to give them a couple touches. But one, James Conner is their best back. And two, if you just look at the Steelers' history over the last few years, we know that this is a big fat lie. Okay. We know that Le'Veon Bell and James Conner, respectively, when it's been their backfields, have been workhorse backs. And even when they have gone down, the Steelers then side with workhorse backs. I mean, in two stints, D'Angelo Williams, I believe this was like 2016, 22 touches, 24 touches, 29 touches, 18 touches, 31 touches, 25 touches, so on and so forth. Then when he was substituting in for a suspended Le'Veon Bell, 32 touches and 36 touches. Again, last year when James Conner sat, Jalen Samuels got 18 touches, 21 touches, 15 touches. This is not a backfield that they know or are comfortable of dishing out volume and touches to multiple backs. To me, Pat, it is exclusively a one back offense, and that back is going to be James Conner if healthy.
Unless they've realized the error of their ways. You know, their last every down back turned out to not be too jazzed about that usage and what he thought was kind of them running him into the ground. And, you know, they have part of this that hasn't been just James Conner saying it. I think the Steelers running backs coach kind of got in on it and said, you know, a very classic offseason cliche, but they want to try to keep James Conner healthier this year. And James Conner seemed very open to that idea. I agree that it's probably mostly coach speak, but also kind of a weird variable is that, you know, Jalen Samuels is like almost more of like an H-back than a traditional running back. So maybe it's almost like they view it as a different role position, and he won't necessarily cut in like in a way that a traditional like change of pace like breather back would, but he just kind of cuts in just by virtue of almost playing a different position than James Conner. But I do mostly agree that it's probably a lot of hot air with a lot of not real news happening this time of year. And
right, it kind of is offensive specific, right? Like they're not every team is going to be able to deploy multiple backs. Like we know the Panthers can't do it, for example, but the Patriots can. Kyle Shanahan can, some other, the Eagles that we just talked about can, the Bears can, but I don't know if the Steelers offense of how it's constructed and orchestrated and the idea of it from their own coaching standpoint is one that they would feel comfortable doing this.
Yeah. I mean, well, the evidence in your favor is that they haven't, as you correct. laid out perfectly. I mean, that doesn't mean that it can't change. We talked about this a bit last week, and my opinion is still the same, basically, even though, you know, the beat writer for The Athletic, Mark Caboli, I believe his name is. We talked about him earlier with Dante Moncrief. But he came out and said that he agrees with you, Josh. He thinks that once the season starts, that they maybe this is their intention, but once the season starts, they'll fall back onto their kind of workhorse ways. The one thing I will say, and I made this point last week, so I'm rehashing this, is that they did play one game together last year after that Connor was gone with injury. It was in week 17. Connor played 32 snaps. Samuel played 31. Connor got 14 carries and 3 targets. Samuel's got 2 carries and 8 targets, which obviously for the types of backs they are makes sense why that split would work out. So it's not absurd to me to think this would happen, but I think that you're right that history suggests that once everything kind of starts going, that they'll kind of fall back on who they've been.
I told you I wanted this opportunity to say that I have spotted no lies with the Ronald Jones offseason praise, and that for better or worse, I'm believing in a Rojo sophomore revival. I'm kind of like half kidding, but not even really. You know, like it was very surprising when the Bucks added no one to their backfield. You know, Bruce Arians, speaking of one back coaches, was one of the people who established this tradition in Pittsburgh and then stuck with it in Arizona. So Bruce Arians has always been a one back coach. And, you know, we all know Rojo is a high second round pick. It's safe to say the Bucks probably know what they have in Peyton Barber and are going to give Ronald Jones every opportunity to earn the number one spot on the depth chart. And, you know, he didn't look like he belonged on an NFL field last year, but I'm willing basically to give Ronald Jones a second chance based on his draft pedigree, based on his coach, and, you know, based so far on the positive offseason reports. Usually there are puff pieces this time of year, but sometimes you will get, you know, so-and-so is still not picking up the system, so-and-so still not clicking. So he's at least getting the right kind of offseason stories written about him. And basically I'm willing to see where the Ronald Jones offseason storylines take us.
And I think, like, the point is, as we've talked about on this podcast, I was not a huge Ronald Jones fan last year. I don't believe, Josh, you were not either, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, like, we're not standing for Ronald Jones or anything.
No.
But to write him off after one season is absurd. Like, it really is.
I think it was fewer than 30 touches, basically, too. I mean, which, again, it would have been more if he had looked good. But yeah, it was a little early to write the man's obituary.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, they didn't add anybody, and he is basically competing with Peyton Barber. To be fair, that was also the situation last year, and he wasn't able to do anything with it. But
surely he can beat out Peyton Barber.
Well, the deal is, though, that we didn't hear this stuff about him last year. Now we're hearing it from the coaching staff. It would not, like, I think the expectation should be that Ronald Jones goes and wins the job. And if that doesn't happen, then, you know, we can get into the write-off portion of the program.
Just like of all the players in the NFL, to take this moment, this platform, to talk about Ronald Jones, Pat, I mean, you kind of hedge yourself a little bit, but I don't think you'll be able to break away from Ronald Jones' connection as we head into the season.
Why would you want to?
Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in. Ray and Pat, thank you for doing this. Thanks for taking the time. If you enjoy this podcast for any moment, be sure to subscribe to it. Even better, if you're already a subscriber, leave us a ring review. We'll be back hopefully later on this week for another episode. And until then, I'll talk to y'all soon. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.